Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. We channel content and connections for all your custom content needs. Visit www.conduit-inc.com. If they ain't biting, catch them with content. Guys, I am really, really proud to bring you an excerpt of a conversation I had with a woman by the name of Jennifer Fondreve. Now, Jennifer is a chief humanity officer. She's a highly sought out public speaker and has dedicated her life, or the next chapter of her life, to understanding and supporting and helping organizations and executives with the human aspect that results from mergers and acquisitions, the disintermediation of industry, the cutting of jobs, the whole deal. She has been through it. She is someone who's got a long history in the advertising world. She ran marketing for some very large organizations, and she saw it and lived it firsthand when companies were merged and put together. And what came of that, what was born of that, is this new passion of hers around the human aspect. What happens to us individually when mergers and acquisitions take place? But our conversation steered a little bit away from that because it also talked about what happens to us on an individual level in an industry like ours. When companies go out of business, when there's rapid and dramatic change. And so her studies, her research is applicable not just with organizations that are being put together or combined, but also with industry that is going through remarkable change. I thought it was fascinating. She and I could have probably talked for days because, we're a little bit kindred spirits in that respect. And I love what she's learned out of the nuts and bolts of mergers and acquisitions and how it translates to people. And I think there's some real nuggets in here in this conversation around how we need to let go and be a little bit more human in our endeavors overall. And so I just was really, really excited to have her on. So I will let you give it a listen here, and I hope you enjoy my fun conversation with Jennifer Fondreve. Jennifer.
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
I can. I tried a couple more times on Skype, but it kept saying I needed Skype credits and...
No, I'm sorry about that. You know, listen, I'm running a well-oiled machine here at Conduit Incorporated. I don't know if you can tell, but with calendar...
I get it for side hustle, so don't worry.
That's right. I just, I ooze professionalism right now. And, everybody just has to get out of the way. I apologize. Technology in today's world and at the bare minimum, I'm just glad that you called and we get to chat.
No worries. I actually just think it's funny. I mean, think about what technology enables us to do, and yet we still get frustrated,
My kids.
Once I just pause and think about what it does that I could never do before, right? But if it doesn't work instantly... What I just laugh about is the fact that we no longer just have an on-off switch. Everything is power. It's like we've come up with new complicated words just to say off.
I know. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, my kids, they're a great example, right? They get frustrated if the wireless... I go up and see my mother in Little Erie, Pennsylvania, and in the house I grew up in, which was a puny little house. She lives right by the lake where, cell coverage just can't get to. And And so, I mean, when you put five different devices on her little weak little wireless, they're losing their minds.
The house implodes.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, there's some comedian that does some bit about how people get so frustrated 30,000 feet in the air if the wireless is down. And he's going, we're 30,000 feet in the air and you know, connected to the internet. I mean, at some point, you're right. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing how quickly not only technology has taken over, but how our frustrations and expectations rise with all that, and makes us pretty. I don't know. You and I talked about this before, but I mean, it makes us so much less independent. You know, we're. I don't know. I'm worried about it.
I'm glad I had a quick insight into that when I was working at NAFTEC, right, with digital mapping.
Yeah.
It astonished me. People would literally leave their common sense in the house. As soon as they got in the car, they just would blissfully listen to the nav system, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, this is technology. It's still being perfected, but you'd be willing to drive off, you know, into a ditch because the thing said to turn left.
right.
Okay.
I know.
We were dealing with that, but trust me. I was like, okay, humanity is not always as smart as I'd hope they would be, but that's a good lesson for me to know now.
Yeah. I wrote a column or a blog or something a few years back about, I was pulling into a gas station and I saw someone ask, I'm sorry, someone came up to me and asked me directions. And I was just kind of taken aback, you know, and I thought, that doesn't really happen anymore. And I thought, gosh, it's just kind of an analogy for the lack of engagement, and we're burying our heads in technology. And I'm worried, you know, I worry about people and certainly my kids and the next generation, and you know, and are we losing a sense of, well, make it a blatantly obvious segue, but you know, you are a chief humanity officer. So
I know, shows how worried I am.
Seriously. I mean, you know,
like I've got to take the title on and do something about it.
You know, I mean, but it's true, right? I mean, it's an epidemic, and I got to believe that this is at the core of, you know, what you're endeavoring to do here, because, man, we've lost a little bit of that. Having said that, my hope is that maybe we're getting to the point where there's a little bit of a backlash, that maybe we are going to get a little bit more human.
Not yet, but I think the pendulum is starting to get shaken enough that it's going to come off of its hitch and maybe start swinging back. But it'll be steps.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be immediate. Because what I find, and you and I talked about this before, and I was at a conference this week where, and it was a mergers and acquisitions conference, by the way.
Right.
And in it, the gentleman, and I forgot kind of what role, I think he was in investment banking, but they did due diligence, right? And he talked about the fabulous aspect that in due diligence now, before they used to have to fly to a company, get all of the information, you know, you'd have to actually meet people face to face.
Right.
And he said, now the benefit is with all of technology, we can get this all just sent to us via PDF. Now, fortunately, he did acknowledge, he said, the downside of that, though, is you're seeing people less directly, looking them in the eye and assessing right there, okay, is this the right kind of seller? Is this the right kind of buyer?
Right.
But the tendency is the more focus more now even on what the numbers tell me and you know, is this a good investment or not, versus, okay, what did this team look like when we met them?
Yeah.
So it's just fascinating to me. And I think you're just going to always have people who, not the glass half full or half empty, but it'll people who will just think efficiencies are amazing. And then people like you and like me who go, holy cow, efficiency is wiping out the opportunity to be human beings at work. Right.
So, yeah.
I think we just got to add more people to the herd.
I know. You know, it's funny. I was reading, have you ever read any of Daniel Pink's books?
I follow him. I haven't gotten to his books yet, but yeah.
There was a time when I was, just reading, I thought the stuff he was putting out was fabulous, and I was borderline stalking him. But he's written some amazing stuff. And the reason that I always liked his stuff was because he was a journalist before he became this renowned author. And he goes back and he gets real stories and he does real research. You know, in today's world, anybody can throw stuff up and, that's deemed content. But he goes back and
I call it internet landfill.
That's right. That's exactly right. I mean, it is. It's funny. He wrote a book that was like my Bible called A Whole New Mind like 10 years ago. And this was when I first started my company. And he was talking about, he used the analogy of John Henry back in the day when, the analogy or the metaphor for the change in the industrial age where machines were starting to replace the sweat equity that people were putting in. And then he's talked about what computers were doing. And this is 10 years ago. And he's saying, it's going to replace the left side of our brains, that all this analytical, this stuff, that things that we were kind of just teasing about, that's all going to the left side. And so he was saying it's this day and age when the right brainers are going to rule the future. And I just feel like, that's the computers probably can't touch that, and I think that you're kind of diving into a little bit of the right side and the creative side, and maybe there's a little hope on the other side of this whole thing that we're going to be a little bit more creative. But when you were talking about efficiency, it reminded me of that book and how there's so much stuff on the left-hand side that's getting dismantled that we collectively have to push to the other side. And I still think there's going to be this craving, if you will, for human interaction, that it's tough to put it all down in data and really get a feel for how business will operate. Do you feel that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. And what gives me hope, frankly, it's probably what spurned my, let's go for this, let's do it, is when I was still actively a chief marketing officer, I gave a presentation on cultivating the human point of view in an era of data-driven decision-making. Mm-hmm. And I did the presentation, I will absolutely confess, I did it because it was a growing concern of mine. I was worried that as a marketing leader, I was starting to expect my team, because it was the expectation held over me, that every solution had to be data-driven.
Right.
And I won't bore you with the long details, but I had an epiphany moment and just realized, holy cow, right? Because I'm thankful. Back in my very first days where I started my career was in advertising. And I interacted with the guys who did the three martini lunches, who would smoke in the office. They weren't smoking anymore by the time I was there, but they still were crotchety, right? But the benefit of that was they would always ask me when we were working on campaigns, so what does your gut tell you, right? The data is going to tell you one thing, kid, because I would always get kid.
Yeah.
But then they'd say, what does your gut tell you, right? Do you think, does this campaign resonate? Does it connect with you emotionally? And it really helped me think about developing a gut instinct. So fast forward, now I'm a marketing leader and I'm thinking, wow, I've got to model using gut instinct, but I need to equally train my team to think more about how to cultivate their gut instinct. I presented this and it was at one of those marketing conferences where all day long it was about digital marketing and having data-driven solutions. I thought I was going to bomb. I was like, all right, people are just going to, half the audience will be gone.
Right.
And I was swarmed after this presentation, shockingly. And it was, I had people say, oh, I wish you could come to my office and speak to the people around me. Yes, I feel that. It was just, I struck a chord. And so I say it gives me hope, because the more we talk about it, the more people will come forward.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need to go down that path, but I think you're seeing that now with the Me Too movement. It just takes some brave souls to step out and say this is behavior that we need to alter and we need to get smart on. So in this case, right, you and I both feel that we're losing our sense of humanity at work.
Yeah.
And I think the more we talk about it and the more we engage other people who say, you're right, what can we do about that? I'm hopeful we'll start to change that tide.
Sure. Well, and, you know, one of the things that I wonder, and I'll ask you, is so they swarm you. You know, you have your Jerry Maguire moment. You go off, you do this, and
right.
And but they
now, is it the Jerry Maguire where you had me in hello, or the I write my mission statement and then I walk out with my box of
that's right,
staples.
That's right. Going, I'm not going to go crazy, but. But you know what? I mean, he was getting past the antiseptic and you were getting past that and you were frustrated with that. And you know, but I wonder if they were swarming you after the fact, if they, in fact, one, they thought this is a concern of mine because what I've always done is getting displaced. You know, the gut instinct is now being delegated to data, and everybody is mm-hmm. giving that power. And is it, were they swarming you out of fear? Like, yeah, I need someone who's going to be my champion to validate my existence and keep me in my role. Or was it that they were swarming you because they say, no, I truly believe that data cannot replace this stuff. There is a portion of what we do that the computers, the machines, the data will never overtake. And, or is it a combination of the two?
I think it's a combination. And honestly, it depends on your age. What surprised me was, the message resonated in particular with junior level employees.
Wow.
I think you've got enough senior marketing execs like me who absolutely chatted with me afterwards and said that message really resonated. But I got a sense they're kind of resigned to the fact that unless they come with everything that's purely data driven, and again, it depends on your work environment, the core values of the company, a lot of that will influence, you know, how you're seen in terms of your decision making. But and it's the group I wanted to hit, so I was thrilled, right? Your junior level employees saying, really? There's a belief that maybe this isn't all good. I thought that was just me
mm-hmm.
who stuck in my cube crunching numbers, hoping I can make the numbers work for the decision, right, that we're
right.
looking for.
Right.
And I also, to be fair, I intentionally tried to combat a couple of myths, or I don't, actually, they're not myths, but concerns, right? So one of the key things I hear all the time is, yeah, but gut instinct is biased,
mm-hmm.
right? And you will only look for data that supports your gut instinct.
Right.
So my answer to that is true. Absolutely, that's a possibility, and research has shown that happens. That's why you need your own set of trusted advisors, people around you who will call BS on you, who
right.
will look at something from a different perspective to make sure you feel rock solid in that decision, and will force you to think, okay, was it too much of my gut or not? And so I use that as a random example because the data, the, you know, desire to use your gut instinct more was just, I would say that was kind of the moment in time where I thought, okay, if this is, this, this is humanity, whether it's how we treat people during corporate reorg, corporate change, during mergers and acquisitions. It's even the human side of data from a solutioning standpoint, right? So that's when I just started to go bigger and broader about, man, it's about bringing humanity back to business, period.
Right.
And it's been an amazing past couple of years as I've really dug into it. And I'm pleasantly surprised how many people feel the same way.
Well, I mean, I think there's, look, I've got a robust industry. I mean, and I say that because I think it's full of people who are inspired and care. Don't get me wrong. Printing graphic arts industry has been sliced and diced just as many as any other industry. And so, but when you cut across this industry and you look at what people are concerned about, I think certainly are they going to be relevant going forward? Even what they sell. I mean, even what we do custom publishing and we've got a lot of clients who are selling print and campaigns and they always rub up against those people that are saying, you know, what's the data? You know, what's the ROI? I spend X, I got to get Y. And I just can't get my head around. I think that's great stuff in terms of just helpful insight and data. But historically, if I knew I could spend something here and get a guaranteed return over here, then I might as well just go to Vegas. And so I think that our industry is battling that because they're obviously trying to sell and encourage an investment in advertising and print and putting the vibe out. And they're also concerned that, look, they can't really knock on doors like they used to. They can't get the human connection that you talk about because we have all these tools at our disposal to keep people at our arm's length. So on two levels, they're really concerned about that. I'm assuming you see that in multiple industries.
Yeah. Oh, across the board. But, actually, even before jumping into that, I was thinking as you were talking about your industry, what I find fascinating and would love to just hear your couple thoughts on this is the fact that this push towards digital, everyone thinks paper. Who needs paper anymore?
Yeah.
Yet you've seen research that demonstrates you learn and retain better when you read something on paper.
Yeah.
And I do think that, I don't know if it's pendulum swing or backlash, I do feel like that equally is going to start to creep back towards, I need something solid. I need something tangible because everything's, sitting in the cloud. It's all the Ethernet.
I know.
You know what I mean? Like that's equally, I think it's one of the symptoms, but I find it fascinating that I remember companies being cutting edge when they no longer had paper.
Yeah.
I've had those moments where people said, no, we don't hand out business cards. I was like, well, then do you exist?
I know. Well, I mean, you hit it right on the head. This is not only are we concerned about what we sell, essentially, and knowing full well that it is actually very human. In my last podcast, I had Danielle Dejean on. He's a creative director, and we were talking about the haptic nature of print, right? That we interpret the world through touch. And when you have something like that and you can touch it, you take some ownership to it. And I said to him, I was telling him something about, my little mother in Erie, Pennsylvania. She's going to be thrilled that she's made the podcast twice now. But she, I was up there for Christmas, buried in snow, and I was reading my old local newspaper over a cup of coffee like it was my job. It felt
it was
great.
Probably a wonderful feeling.
It felt familiar. It felt, yeah. And there was something that I don't know. It was something about it. I thought, my gosh, I've been in this industry forever. But I do think that there's, that's what I was talking about is, you know, when does this backlash come? Because I think people are craving for it. And I think it's fascinating that you said that, you know, you've got junior people, younger people that your message is resonating with. And because, gosh, they've not really had the human interaction that we had.
Exactly. I mean,
you know, it's funny, you know, not to do on too much of a tangent, but when you were talking about those old ad execs that you were dealing with, and you know, you could almost see it and smell the smoke, so to speak, you know, when you were telling
that.
And there's something real in that.
The reason why I highlight that too is because I had that experience. And if we don't create that experience for our teams, the junior people coming in, they don't know any better. They have no context for another way of doing something.
Right.
So I think it resonated because it was kind of like, you know, they had their head down, just working. And suddenly someone says, hey, there's a different way to do this. And here's how to think about it. And this is the way to develop that other way.
Right.
And it was almost kind of like, really? Holy cow. You mean, and do other people, could they think this way too?
Right.
Mean, and the point that I make, because I know I've been in the C-suite. It's data, it's metrics. That's what it has made us exponentially smarter. So I'm not dismissing that. And there is no way the majority of us would ever walk into our senior exec's office or our boss and say, you know, Bob, my guts just tell me we got to go this way, right? There's no way. One, you wouldn't think to do it, and two, if you did, you'd get laughed out.
Right.
So my pitch is to say that's not what I'm saying, but you have access to the most powerful data processor you own, your brain, because it has been collecting information since the moment you were born.
Right.
It's a collection of your experiences and learning. That's what you have in that.
Right.
And I think people think of gut intuition as just touchy-feely, you know, wacky, you know, granola. I think it's just not relevant. And I say, well, no, think about what the true definition of inner wisdom.
Yeah. Well, and your gut, I mean, it's not, I mean, it's, you're right. I mean, that's an interesting way to put it, because your gut, you can't go with your gut unless you're from there. Meaning that if you're sincerely engaged with your market, and you've got your finger on the pulse, that you're talking to people, you're using human interaction to have conversations. I mean, look, for me, this is part of it. Having conversations with people like you is a big deal, and it's just amazing insight. I get to go out and just talk to people. I have a platform where I can just ask them questions. You know, I'm not trying to sell them anything. I'm trying to say, look, we're trying to do a story, and so. It puts you in a unique way to be able to come back and say, hey, Mark, you know, somebody might say, Mark, what do you think? What's your feel? And I can say, well, look, I've talked to all these different people, and I can talk about stories, and that's the gut. And I think that's what you're saying, is that the gut comes from that experience, and you marry that with data.
Yeah, and it's what led me down the path I'm on. My gut was saying, after going through 3 acquisitions, there's got to be a better way. Everyone just becomes a bit of a robot.
Right.
Understandable, right? You're worried about losing your job. You don't know what's going to happen next. People do crazy things when coming from a position of fear. I have jokingly said it's like invasion of the body snatcher. You'll be in meetings and people you know and thought you knew well suddenly become different people. And this is no slam on those people. I test no judgment. It could be me, right? I'm just saying if we don't shine a light on the fact that when going through mergers and acquisitions, there is a humane way of doing that can actually contribute to the success. I think the ingoing premise has always been, you know, it's not personal. We just got to do this, and we got to do it efficiently and effectively and do it quickly. I agree with all of those things.
Right.
But I think that we have a greater responsibility to help people understand what their role is in a new vision, help them understand, okay, this is the reason why we're going this way. This is the reason why we either merged or were acquired or we acquired somebody else.
Right.
Without that happening, you have just thousands, if not millions of people who get lost as a result of going through a merger and acquisition. So
sure.
that's really what prompted me to say, I got to write a book about this. I need to help more people understand what to expect.
Yeah. Well, let's do that. So let's, you know, so, cause I think, our industry, I think clearly, as we've discussed, there's this epidemic or this grave concern on the human side in general in business. And so you translate that and you get down a little bit more into the funnel and you say, look, here's an industry, for example, we've had a lot of mergers and acquisitions. We've had some closures. We've had people leaving and going from one company to the next. So, you know, we're clearly in the midst of that. But before, so, and I want to get your take on your message to them, to the leadership of this industry, that type of thing. But before that, give me a little chronology. How did you come to this whole thing? I know that we've talked a little bit about it, but maybe give me some of your background or the group, some of your background in terms of how this all came down. And
you bet. Why would I be doing this?
Yeah. Yeah.
I ask myself that every day.
Yeah. Me too.
You know, it's interesting. And I'm thankful. I was in advertising for 15 years. Amazing experience. I worry a bit now about the state of advertising as an industry, but I learned an invaluable set of skills. Everything from how to quickly learn about a company, customer service, client service, and fortunately some of the most brilliant creative people I've ever met. And I, at the end of the day, I always know I'm both a right and left brain person, but ideas are what spark people.
Right.
But I moved into marketing. Jury's out on whether that was a good decision or not. Loved it, but went through in that time frame. I have had three different marketing roles. I went through three acquisitions, and the first one, all three were bad in different ways. And I'd say the common themes were people just losing faith in their abilities, losing faith in themselves. And I will tell you, I'm not going to bother going through names of companies or where I was and what it was all about. That's irrelevant. But I actually did okay. I kept my teams for the most part. Mm-hmm. I managed to increase responsibility. But I found that more of my job was less about doing what I was actually supposed to be doing, marketing. And it was more about job justification and trying to figure out what the next decision was going to be and how long one decision might stick.
Right.
Because when you have a merger and acquisition and the strategy is not clear, the tendency is to switch course frequently. So people just then assume, you know what, why bother doing this job? Because we're just going to switch to something new in 3 months.
Right.
And so I felt that there was the randomness of decision making and the lack of strategy was ruining people's lives. What I like to say, it was just unnecessary collateral damage. And the people who were hurt most were middle managers.
Right.
I like to say they're the people who aren't in the room when the deal is made, but they're burdened with the execution. They're the ones on the front lines who know what it takes to get the job done. And if you'd actually pulled them in advance of making this announcement, they would have said, well, maybe we can do this, but the time frame is different or the resources required are going to be different than what you've set up. Yeah, you know, I mean, listen, truth be told, as senior executives, when you get to that point, you know a lot, but you're not as smart about the front lines and what it takes to get things done as your frontline people.
Right.
So that disconnect can wreak havoc. And that can happen a lot in a merger and acquisition. So because I'd gone through three of these and been on all sides, I became more and more convinced if I could just give people more transparency on what to expect, the stages of grief that they would go through, the fact that they will live in denial for a while, but they got to get to acceptance. Right. And the fact that acceptance doesn't mean you have to agree with what happened, but it means you have to accept it.
Right.
And that there is opportunity in chaos, but you need to find it. You need to, don't wait for the company to tell you what your role is or what you should be doing, because you might be waiting a while. And at that point, if you've been waiting for a while and you haven't been doing anything, then they don't know what your value is.
Right.
So my message is, don't wait to be told. Figure out what your role can be. Get clear on the vision. Keep asking questions to get smart. And there's also the other side, which is maybe you're not clear on what you can contribute, but you see an opportunity to learn. That's equally good.
Sure.
It's all about expanding your skill set. So I was convinced that there's so much that goes unsaid when an M&A happens. Either people can't tell you what's really going to go on, they don't know, or if they told you, they're worried you would, you know, fall apart in a heap, you know, yeah, puddle of tears, or you would just leave, right?
It's right.
There's so much of that. So I'm in the camp of more transparency is better. So I jokingly say I'm the M&A whisperer. It's kind of like, here's what's really going to happen. And I know it because I've done 50 interviews. I continue to do them. There's a pattern. There's a consistency of how things play out.
Wow. Well, and you know what? And I mean, it's I'm sure it's just magnified in the merger and acquisition, but the things that you've talked about are probably pretty prevalent even in any organization. I mean, I've dealt with, think about it. I mean, I've dealt with so many organizations that people don't know what the next day is going to bring, you know, and they're sitting in their office or their cube and, you know, they don't want to stick their head out from underneath and because they don't know. And I mean, not only is that happening in M&A, this all fits together, right? You're talking a little bit about the human piece. The irony is we're putting our betting the farm on this data, and then back on the other side are human beings, and their fears, you know, we all, like you mentioned, fears are being played out. And I mean, I used to be in a large organization and it went through, you know, reorganizations and all the stuff. And I just remember thinking, God, it can be soul draining and almost, you know, day in and day out, people are going to work thinking about, well, when's the other shoe going to drop? And
exactly.
And yeah, that they're not even, so at some point they're not even focused on the marketplace. They're not focused on creating value. And that's, you've got to see that. It's got to be ramped up to the nth degree in a merger and acquisition, right?
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. So Gallup has done a poll, I believe it's for the last 15 years, about employee engagement. And what's fascinating is the trend line has been pretty consistent. Less than 30% of your employees are typically engaged. And it's even a smaller percentage who are actively engaged in your workforce, which leaves about 70% who are disengaged.
Yeah.
And then you have within that 70%, I think it hovers around 30-25% who are actively disengaged. So those are the people who are going around saying, you know, this sucks, I hate it, or who may actively be trying to, you know, set the business on fire.
Right, right.
So it's just fascinating to me, you know, that trend line's pretty consistent, and yet I think data and our fixation on that is probably contributing to magnifying that. And the ironic thing is there's probably no bigger data-driven decision than a merger and acquisition.
Right.
Because the first thing they're looking at are the finances, the ROI, the people, the talent absolutely plays in, but typically even in that assessment, it's top talent.
Yeah.
So I just, when I think about, you know, poster child for data-driven decision, it's a merger and acquisition. But
yeah,
you make an excellent point. That's an extreme, but corporate change in general is disruptive.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. All right, so you're working with these people, and you're going in, going, listen, You know, I'm your guide. You know, what are some of the things that you do? Let's do this twofold. What would be some of the things that you would be talking to the leadership about? And then, you know, like you said, obviously you want to encourage the people down the pecking order to take initiative and be a little bit more entrepreneurial is kind of what I heard in terms of just but maybe give me two sides. You know, what would you tell the leadership?
Yeah.
And what would you tell you know, the rest of us?
Absolutely. You know, what's funny is, and that's because I'm a marketer, I think about it through the whole journey, meaning that there are different, I don't know if they're inflection points, but certain milestones. The National Center for the Middle Market has just done research on M&A in the middle market. And what was interesting about that research is that the percentage, and I think it was like 25-30% of buyers or sellers were surprised by the M&A, right? Mm. Either they were surprised they got the call and suddenly they're, yep, they went ahead and did it, or surprised that they bought it. Just both sides hadn't anticipated that they were actually going to be doing what they did shortly before they actually just went ahead and said, yeah, let's sell or let's buy.
Wow.
So what that made me think, though, is, man, we've got to prepare these companies to be smarter, to be thinking ahead of time, because there are things that you can think about. The moment a company thinks, the owner, the leadership, the moment they think, you know, we may need to merge or we may need to acquire or be acquired to survive. The moment that idea happens, you start to exhibit behavior that you don't even realize is sending off cues to your workforce. And so the irony is, it's kind of like once, I guess the best analogy I could give you is the moment in your head you think, you know what, I really should get a different job.
Right.
This just isn't the job I want anymore. You start to behave differently at work. You
right.
think you're doing the same things, but people pick up. You're not putting in as much work. You know, your head's just not in another place. You don't have that 100% commitment. Well,
right.
there are the same cues that happen around M&A. So the moment the idea even is there, you don't say anything to anybody. But people will say, gosh, why is Bob got his door closed a lot? Or why do our senior executives seem to keep meeting in remote places
right.
a lot? Why is Judy flying to Utah so much?
Right.
And the irony of this is that people are going to come up with more nefarious plot lines than what you're actually doing.
Right.
But void of information, it's just, So the moment the idea happens, you start to exhibit behavior, whether you realize it or not. People start to pick up on these cues. They then spend a percentage of their brain power thinking, I wonder what's happening. Are we going to get acquired? Are we going to be sold? They already, productivity is affected the moment you have the idea.
Right.
Right. So this is one of the things that I try and impress with senior leaders is I get it. Transparency can be tough. And there's always a worry that if it's shared or announced, people will leave, they'll quit. People will stay for a good vision. If you are crystal clear on the reasons you're doing what you're doing, people will stay. And for family-owned businesses in particular, you know, the loyalty is there more often than not. They believe in the founder. They believe in the business owner. So if you're a good business owner and you clearly paint the vision and the strategy for what you're doing, you'll get people to come on board. But I find it's you're being foolish if you think that people don't know what's going on. There will absolutely be people who are blindsided. I mean, this goes without saying.
Sure.
But the majority will pick up on cues. It's not always going to be good things that they conjure up in their head in terms of what's going to happen.
Right.
And on the flip side, right, so for the workforce, naturally your tendency is going to be, holy cow, are we going to get acquired? Are we going to emerge? What's going to happen to my job? All of those are natural feelings. And so I say those, have those. right? My message is not to say that's silly, don't have those. But equally, consider the fact that this could be a good thing. There may have been programs you have wanted to introduce forever, but you just couldn't. Either you didn't have the resources, you couldn't get the ear of senior leadership, there wasn't budget, people, whatever. There are things now potentially that can happen for the good of the company that you have wanted to do all along. It's why a big part of my message is there's opportunity in chaos. So spend your energy looking for that opportunity as opposed to devoting so much energy to, holy cow, what's going to happen to me?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that advice is so human, you know? I mean, it really is.
I was going to say, and then do the data crunch.
Yeah,
then do what the numbers tell you.
But, you know, I'm taken by this because it's so applicable to life in general. I'm at that point in my life, and especially, you know, watching my kids and even with my team and in the business, there's a part of me that wants to let go of the stuff you can't control. And look, it's be tough. I mean, we're selfish creatures at the core, but at the same time, you know, if you see people gathering in the conference room and you're wondering, look, that's people don't. They don't want to lose their jobs. They don't want to. They want to know what's going on. But it's. If you can somehow find a place where you're saying, I can't worry about it. I got to let go of that. I mean, I've got to work. I've got to endeavor. I've got to do some things here. Like you said earlier, you know that ideas are what matter. And finding that within yourself almost. I mean, that's why I'm saying it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Even what you're doing and how you're presenting to people and coaching people it's like getting back to the human. I know it sounds a little touchy-feely, but it's almost like at the beginning of this conversation, I said, I think there's going to be this backlash, and I think people need to find that within them because then they're just right. Better for everybody. And, you know, they're better. Yeah. They're even better for the company. And like you said, you know, if they tap on your shoulder and say, you know, there's redundancy in the position and you're out, I don't know. I mean, that sucks. But at the same time, you know, it's not what happens to us. It's how we react to it kind of deal.
And, you know, it's funny that you say that because another piece of advice, and I will tell you, this is probably the one I personally struggled with the most because in the first acquisition, the company I was with was my dream job. Mm-hmm. I'd lived in Europe for 3 years. I had created go-to-marketing, and then I got to do that globally. It's the job that I had written I wanted years ago when I was in grad school. And I had a hard time realizing it is not personal.
Right.
A lot of the decisions that come at you feel personal. They are not. They are truly random in nature. It is like the lottery. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard to accept that they're not personal.
Right.
And so that's one of the things that I emphasize a lot in my book and in my coaching. You have to, and I say this to somebody who ranks way too high on the empathy chart. So I say them. I'm a reformed person. I still am high on empathy, but I recognize these decisions are not personal. Companies right. are looking for efficiencies.
Right.
Ideally, this merger acquisition was done to help make the portfolio stronger, to make you more competitive in the market, whatever. But sometimes, more often than you might think, it's done because the company had to. And right. so now they're looking at ways to be efficient as much as possible. You may be collateral damage. What I'm trying to address is what I saw was unnecessary collateral damage because it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. People don't know what their role is. So you have rock stars who suddenly are just lost. Yeah. I joke, it's kind of like one of the architects I talk about in my book is the former rock star. right? The guy or the gal who was just amazing in your original company. Mm-hmm. They're playing rock, but now the new genre is disco. And they're lost. And they keep thinking rock and roll is going to come back. Not right. that rock and roll ever went away, but that's the analogy that I use. And it's just, you know, and it's tough because you see these people and you want them to pivot, but they're still used to playing the one chord. So for me, a big part of my message is to really encourage and empower people to make decisions, smart decisions for themselves, be clear on what their values are, mm-hmm. and look to see where the opportunity is.
Before I'm going to ask you a couple, you know, where people can get your book, all that kind of stuff. But before I do that, let me, as you've embarked on this, and so it's been just under a couple of years, right?
Yeah.
What's been the biggest surprise? I mean, you probably went off and said, you know, I've got all this knowledge and I'm, you know, I know what I'm doing here. What do you think over that time has been your biggest surprise or your biggest learning?
You know, it's funny. I started this odyssey just to write the book. I felt, okay, I have to write this book. I went through 3 acquisitions. I just have to help more people. And I thought at the time, if I write this book, that'll do. And I was still planning to take my next marketing role. Mm-hmm. But as I interviewed people, and I've had the privilege of interviewing CEOs and CFOs and getting their experiences and lessons learned and advice that they wish they'd been given, but they would always consistently say, so what are you doing besides the book? And I would say, well, I'm just getting the book done. That's a big enough hurdle as it is. But they would say, but this is a good idea. That this slice of the workforce needs this kind of message, needs this kind of guidance, but a book will only go so far. And then, you know, I'd have I'm sure this is going to make you cringe. I'd have people say, people don't read books anymore. You know, people don't read. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, the biggest surprise was that the message resonated, and it resonates with target audiences that I wouldn't think. I've talked to private equity guys who I laughed because I thought, they're going to think this is just touchy-feely. Can't we all just get along kind of stuff?
Right.
And they said, no, this is good. They said, listen, at the end of the day, do you think we like ruining people's lives? And I'm not saying that private equity guys feel that way, but they're just saying, hey, at the end of the day, when we're doing a deal, we know some people are going to get hurt. That's unfortunately an aspect of deal making. But if this can help more people get smarter and figure out how to contribute faster, that would be an amazing thing. So right. I think I've just been surprised at the variety of people who say this is a good message. You just got to get it out there.
Right. So tell me, all right, so the book is called Now What? A Survivor's Guide for Navigating and Thriving Through Acquisition. Where can people get it, and who should read it?
Well, I'll start there. So the who should read it part. So initially, and I still believe this is the case, it is a survivor guide for the middle manager, the people on the front lines. That can be VPs, directors, senior managers. Initially, I thought it's not your senior executives. Mm-hmm. I've had enough senior executives who I have interviewed for the book who said this book should be read by everyone in business. But when you're writing a book, you have to have a target in mind. And my muse has been middle managers, because a big part of it is giving advice, things you wish you knew or people could tell you. And when you're in the middle of a merger and acquisition, advice doesn't flow freely. So this book gives you all the, tips and advice that you could wish for, and it just makes you smarter. So I'd say actually it's a bigger band than I had originally thought, but my sweet spot really are the guys on the front lines, the guys and gals who are doing the work. So currently, I'm actually still writing the book. I have 50 interviews. I've talked to two publishers, and my goal is to get it published in 2018. So you can go to my website and sign up for the book, and certainly reach out, because I've had people ask me, hey, we're going through a merger and an acquisition. I'd love to have you come in. Or do you do individual coaching? Because I'm going through one of these things now and I'm not sure how to handle it.
Yeah.
I do all of those things. And so what I would encourage people to do is go to my website, which fortunately is my name.
JenniferFondervey@.com, right?
Jennifer J. Fondervey.
Ah, okay. All right. There you go. JenniferJFondervey.com. And you can pre-order the book there, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, I think it's... I think it's fascinating. I think it's going to lead to a much broader scope for you, because I think that the stuff that you've tapped into, on some level, I don't want to say it's the low-hanging fruit, but it's certainly magnified in the M&A world. But I think it's applicable to so much in our world, so I'm actually pretty encouraged by it. I think that at some point you're diving in, and I know you do this in coaching and consulting, but I think that you're diving into a major, I don't want to say epidemic, I don't like that word, but it is a big deal, and this human side of things is going to come back into vogue. It's going to be critical. I mean, it's amazing that we're almost going to have to teach a generation how to engage and I don't know. I'm pretty excited for you in terms of this book, but even beyond. And I hope you are.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I there is no way I would be on this journey if I wasn't passionate about it and if I didn't think there was opportunity. I'm giving up a marketing career I worked really hard to get to in order to pursue this. And so for me, it's I'm looking forward to where I start to see the momentum shift.
Well, we're kindred spirits, because I kind of did that, and there was something. There was just something pulling me in a different way. And I think, you know, my hope is that this is considered a calling for you. And
absolutely.
It certainly sounds like it. Jennifer, I can't thank you enough for being on this. It's really great stuff. I am glad that our mutual friend put us in touch, and I'm I hope that we're gonna keep talking, and we're gonna do some other stuff together. So, but I'll talk to you about that offline. But I think that my readers and our community are gonna love this, and I think it's. Not just because it's kind of music to their ears, but they also need the tools to kind of let go and realize that being a little bit more human is okay. So,
yeah,
yeah, absolutely. So
thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to share it.
Yeah. Again, everybody, JenniferJFondervey.com. That's where you go. You can pre-order her book, check out what she's all about, look at her consulting and her speaking, and Jennifer, again, thanks so much for being a part of this.
Thanks as well.
All right.
Take care.
All right, you too. Take care. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jennifer Fondervey. She is a remarkable woman, and I think the world craves people with ideals like hers. And I think that we, as a community, as an industry, can take some real learnings from what she's trying to preach. And that is that we are in a more human world. I know it seems like technology has become noisy. It's dominated our lives. It's more difficult to connect with people. Mergers and acquisitions seem really antiseptic, and they kind of take people's hearts and souls away. You know, there are lost jobs, there are companies going out of business, and it can be really, really heavy. And yet, with all that said, I think we're in a world where when we connect with the people that we care about, when we connect with friends and family, and our relationships are built on sincerity, and we conduct ourselves with sincerity in more of a human-based way, we are enriched. And so I just can't thank Jennifer enough for taking the time to share a little bit of her wisdom with us and her learnings. I think it's going to be really cool to read her book as after she finishes it. So make sure that you pre-order it or take a listen to it. A reminder, Brushstrokes is a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. We are endeavoring to bring you some thoughtful conversations, some fun, lighthearted, stimulating conversations, and hopefully we're doing that for you, and we will continue to do that. Today's episode was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Conduit channels content and connections and is a group dedicated to helping you build community through the creation of content in the custom publishing process. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom content needs. Guys, I am really excited about the year. We're off to a great start. I hope you are as well. And as always, be the buffalo. Take care.